You're listening to the AfterBuzz TV Network, now the largest new media platform on the web and your number one source for after-show entertainment. Very good, the AfterBuzz Studios in Los Angeles, California. Presented by Maria Menounos and Bing.com. And streaming live thanks to Akamai Technologies. This is AfterBuzz TV's Teen Wolf After Show. We'll break down tonight's episode and get you all the latest news and gossip. And now, another post-game wrap-up show for your favorite TV show. It's AfterBuzz TV's Teen Wolf After Show.
Hello, AfterBuzzers. Bing is for doing, and we're here doing our very first AfterBuzz TV after show for MTV's Teen Wolf, Season 3, Episode 1, Tattoo. Joining me, I'm your host, Kristen Elizabeth Snyder, and joining me is Corey Trench, who is a current assistant editor on Teen Wolf. You may have seen his work in Punk'd or the Justin Bieber documentary. Yes. Across from me is Anik Dufour.
Dufour. Like, what can I do you for?
Oh, well, everyone will remember that.
Yes.
And then our very special guest tonight, you may recognize from shows like True Blood, NCIS, Castle, The Mentalist. And when he's not acting on camera, he can be heard bringing to life numerous characters in video games and audiobooks. He's the leader of the Alpha Pack and this season's villain. Please welcome Gideon Emery.
Thanks for having me. Yeah, True Blood's still coming out, so we'll see.
And love he it. Plays Deucalion this season.
I even brought my glasses in.
Yeah.
I can't put them on with a headphone. So.
That scene was amazing. All the visual effects this season have been amped up. It's so suspenseful, scarier, bloodier, sexier.
We're on steroids now. This show has been built on steroids.
Definitely the twins are on something.
Oh.
Yeah, right.
I heard they took a growth hormone or something.
I'll have whatever they're taking.
Sure. Anyway, this episode had 2.4 million viewers, and it was the highest rated episode of the season. And that's just a huge accomplishment for Teen Wolf. Thank you guys for being here tonight, and congratulations on the success of the
show.
So let's just get into it. I think the best word to describe this show tonight was ephemeral.
Well, I hope its effects are not ephemeral, but yeah.
I just felt like it was so
long-lasting,
Exactly. I'm sure the effects were, but the show was so short, I was on the edge of my seat the whole time in suspense. Yeah. It just felt like an adrenaline rush. I had to watch it again because I was just like, I couldn't expect what was happening next. It was very cinematic.
Yes.
And the music this season, is Dino still composing?
Yes, he is. Yes.
I just felt like the music just matched each of the scenes so well. What did you guys think about it?
Oh, yeah. I mean, just speaking from the editing room standpoint, I mean, especially the opening score was something they worked on a lot. They went through a lot of different versions, but it came out really, really well. I mean, the whole motorcycle chase is just fueled by the music. Just driven by the music completely.
That's a great scene.
Yeah.
I think that was like my favorite scene out of the episode.
Oh, I love that scene.
It was all right. There were some other scenes later on which I enjoyed. No, it's a killer scene.
Yeah.
Let's talk about that scene and go ahead and get into the episode. So we will refer to her as Motorcycle Girl. It appears like she's rescuing Isaac from perhaps this location where the Alphas are also keeping Boyd and Erica. That's just something I'm predicting. We don't know that for sure, but she kind of shocks him to wake him up and then puts him on the back of her bike and says, hold on, and they take off. How do you guys feel about that? Go ahead and jump in.
No, I was just like, I was excited. I was like, I'm really, like, because you're, like, on the edge of your seat, you know, like you were saying, like, the whole time. And you're like, come on, you need to get away. And then all of a sudden, here comes the twins forming into, like, you know, it's like, you know, it's like exciting.
This show's really getting it right because I'm always like, if I could just take this trait from this guy and this trait from this guy and form them together as one, they would be this mega perfect guy. And that's what Teen Wolf is doing. They're taking these two hotties, putting them together, and they're just this one of your wolf pack.
Yeah. It's good. It's good. We've got a little bit of versatility there. Yeah.
I guess they're called Brilliant Charmers this season. So I look forward to that.
We'll see what kind of charming they do. Yeah.
I guess my question would be, like, since they do form into this rather large mega twin werewolf, how does Deucalion, you know, how does he, is he more powerful than the twin alpha? Like, I don't know, that guy's pretty buff.
Look, I think my pack knows their place, you see.
Yeah.
This is the thing. Because at the end of the day, you're going to have somebody who's got the brains, you know.
Right.
And I think Deucalion, you know, may give the impression that, you know, he doesn't have the muscle necessarily. But I think he definitely has the wit and the tactics and the brain to ultimately pull things off that they, none of them could do individually, so...
Right.
Yeah, and I think it's only through his expertise and cunning manipulation that actually he's managed to bring them all together, so they are, you know, greater than the sum of their parts, yeah.
He definitely has a way with words that he, like in that last scene where he talks about getting someone else to do the dirty work for you and to kill whoever you need to be killed. Wasn't that a line from Gerard in season 2?
Yes, it was. Yeah.
And you said you were quoting, in the show, you said you were quoting a friend of yours at that point. So there may be some relation there.
That's the girl who says that. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I'm pretty sure
she
said
she's
it.
Saying. I just kind of smile in response. No,
yeah, no. You actually
what you're referring to?
Yeah, you actually say the line, which is it's just such a great line, just because of the fact. Like, what is he really trying to say?
And it's get someone else to do it for you, but her, she's putting the pieces together.
Yeah, and she says, "Oh, it's Derek," you know, and then you know, you get slashed, and then it's kind of a misdirect because we don't really know.
Well, maybe. That kind of sets off the plot of the whole season for us. We get that in that last line of the show, which I'm bringing up now so the rest of the show makes sense. It's basically Deucalion is going to put Derek against Scott, and obviously Scott is going to form a threat in the future. And so he wants to knock out Scott by using Derek to kill Scott. And then one by one, apparently, Derek will kill his other pack members. So that's going to be the plot for this season, it looks like, as this huge villain, which I love villains, which is why I wanted to bring you on for our very first guest. I just feel like there's so much of a story there, and they're so powerful, and they're often powerful, more powerful than, you know, the good side singly, because the good side, in order to take down a villain, you have to have like basically a whole army and people working together, and it's really the villains who are so, they have this incredible mind, and this whole show was created by Jeff Davis, who created Criminal Minds, so we know that you have a lot to share with us.
I think what's always interesting as well with Teen Wolf is that, you know, Scott's such an earnest character, but there's always stuff happening around him, and he always ends up, you know, there's always somebody like one step ahead sort of thing, you know, and he'll catch up and stuff, but it's great now that you've got this new sort of scheming character, and we don't know where it's going to go, you know. I think what's been fascinating for me being a part of it this season is, you know, we're getting scripts, you know, perhaps a few days or a week ahead, you know, before we shoot something. So it's like, I don't know what's going to happen each time. And then something else comes in like, no, you know, because I'm thinking like, I kind of can see where this character is going. And you, yeah, there's so much that happens this season, which you are not going to expect.
They've definitely set the bar high.
Yeah.
And I know a lot of people said that once they, one of their friends, it spread through word of mouth how much people really like Teen Wolf. And a lot of my friends said they went through the first 2 seasons in a week.
Wow.
To prepare for this premiere.
Yeah.
So, all right. Well, getting back to the episode, we see that Motorcycle Girl does, she shoots the twins with some electric gun. I'm not exactly sure what that is, but I'm sure we'll provide details later. Something she did mention that kind of goes to the mythology of the wolves. Isaac said something about his neck hurting and that they used their claws to get into his neck. And she said, Motorcycle Girl said, that's how they steal and share memories. Can either of you comment on that?
Well, you know, Jeff likes to, you know, expand upon the werewolf mythology. And I guess in his world, that they can do that. They can transfer memories and sometimes retrieve memories from the minds of others. You know, if they need to extract information, it plays such a huge role, especially in the later episodes. But for now, it's just setting up like what does Isaac know? Like what did he see exactly? Mm-hmm. And that sort of just sets up the mystery. And they're just trying to piece it together as the season goes on, like what happened to him and stuff.
And I'm sure that's going to be a great tool for you to use in future episodes.
I mean, what's interesting as well, yeah, exactly, talking about future episodes is exactly that memory and, you know, past events and stuff will definitely come into play and stuff will be revealed. So it's, yeah, there's added layers and added little bits and pieces which so take it to a new level, yeah.
I'm very excited about that. When I heard that line, I had to stop and go back and listen to it again because I was like, that's very cool. And we didn't really get to focus in on it. It was sort of just mm-hmm. in the middle of, like, this suspenseful scene where we had to jump on a bike and hold on for our dear life. So I wanted to focus a little bit more on it and talk about it for our fans. Yeah. By the way, guys, we appreciate your support however possible. If you go to iTunes or YouTube and rate, download, or comment on our show, I'll be reading different comments from the shows each week that you guys leave. And it really helps us here at AfterBuzz TV because you can download all of our podcasts for free. And if you want us to talk about, if you want to join in the discussion, you can give us a call at 424-256-1729. You can tweet me at Cinematic Escape, and I'll be reading some of your comments later. And you can tweet all these guys, and we'll be giving their Twitter handles out shortly. All right, and getting back to the episode, we see Scott's getting a tattoo, and I know you specifically wanted to talk about this tattoo and what Jeff's idea of putting this tattoo in mm-hmm. in the scene was.
Mm-hmm. So it was very interesting. At the end of season two, Tyler Posey got a tattoo, and not in the show, but actually, you know, received it in real life. And I think there was a big talk of, like, well, what are we going to do with this, you know? And Jeff had already had a plan. He was already, like, already thinking ahead, you know, and that's what he does. You know, he likes to think ahead. And he wrote it into the script, I think, in a very unique and interesting way. Yeah, the tattoo means a lot to Scott, and it means a lot to the script because, you know, the whole episode is about change. And, you know, in the episode, Scott talks a lot about getting the tattoo as sort of a reward for himself for not contacting Allison, staying strong, staying, like, true to his belief that, you know, they should not be together, you know, that he should stay strong. So he really got that tattoo as sort of a reminder to himself, you know, to stay, you know, just true to his beliefs and to himself. And the reason why... at least I think that the transition is so painful, him getting the tattoo in the episode, because at first he can't really get a tattoo because of his werewolf healing ability.
Right.
And so towards the end of the episode, he has to literally get it blowtorched by Derek to reveal the tattoo. And I think it's and I don't know, in my mind, I thought it was like a metaphor for, like, you know, change being difficult. And also, you know, being painful at times.
That's a great theme. And, yeah. And I really wish, actually, that a lot of... that we actually did have to use a blowtorch, because I think some people have way too many tattoos. I particularly like this one, but I think people often, you know, it becomes an addiction. But the fact that it means change, and here he said, you know, it was kind of like an open wound because he went all summer trying, and this was a reward for him not calling Allison. But, you know, he was kind of a better himself on his own because he was reading books, he had a word of the day, ephemeral, and he also was saving for his bike that we get to see. And talking about Scott, he's always sort of been, you know, the underdog of the show. We're watching his character mm-hmm. arc, of course. And even the first day of school, he saved his money all summer, we find out, for this green bike that he parks next to these much nicer two black bikes. And it's like, you know, he couldn't be better than Jackson, you know, in the previous two seasons. Yeah. And now he's got these twins to compete with. He can just never be at the top. You know, there's always someone else in his way. And I felt like the bikes, him parking his bikes next to the other two.
Well, yeah, it's like it was kind of a throwback to parking next to the Porsche, right?
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
No, but I really enjoyed the tattoo scene. And whenever they get in the car, Styles is so relieved when it disappears. And he's like, oh, God, thank great, because I hated it. And Styles is a wonderful character as well.
Yeah.
He provides so much comic relief to the scene. And he's one of those guys that just, like, live moment to moment. And he's not really thinking about what's going to happen after I do this or say this, because if he would, he probably wouldn't. And he's just, he kind of reminds me of like that unscathed child that we all should really look at life, approach life to, because anytime Lydia's around, you know, we know that he's going to get rejected, but he still like has this hope. And even though he's gone through these different events with his friends, he still somehow sees the positive outcome of the situation. And the fact that he's gotten hurt before or she's ignored him before doesn't stop him from going ahead and trying again to get her attention. What did you guys think about that scene where they pull up at the red lights?
I love Styles. I think he steals the scenes. I think he steals every scene that he's in. I just think he's like a great character. I thought it was hilarious because he's like, he wants to talk to them, you know, he's like, he's going to roll the window down. And then, you know, they're like, Allison's like, no, go, go. And then she's like, Lydia's like, I can't, it's a red light. And then they just like, he goes in to like roll the window down and they just take off. So it's like, you know, he's poor like Styles again, like left.
I mean, I think he gets a bum deal, you know, from other characters sometimes, because he is this goofball, right? But he's so lovable. But he also is a good barometer for how Scott's feeling at any time, you know. And he'll have greater insight into sort of where Scott is emotionally than Scott does, you know. So he has a lot of insight, I think, which people don't, you know, give him credit for. Yeah,
that's a great point. I absolutely agree with that, because just like a child kind of like speaks a lot and often says things that as an adult you would refrain from, Styles just lets it out there. And Scott's kind of more reserved and nerdy type. But I love getting that internal dialogue from Styles all the time. And I like how he said, oh, they must have not seen us, which is kind of just like it says to me, you know, just like a lot of women and guy relationships in the real world, you either see someone as a mate or you don't. And hopefully Lydia grows to see Styles over time, because we all know he's a great guy and very lovable on screen. But that often happens in the real world, how they just don't see us. So I really like that he had that line in this episode that was like, oh, she must have not have seen us. But she really doesn't see him as a potential mate for her.
Yeah.
I also like the role that Styles plays in the Teen Wolf is, because he's like a detective. You know, he's sort of like filling in his father's shoes, if you will, but on a supernatural scale, because he knows that all these incidents are supernaturally related and his father has no idea. Stalinsky has no idea. And so, you know, it's funny how Styles, like in that one scene with talking about after the deer crash, he's talking about all the deer related crash incidents in the past couple of years. And, you know, his dad's like, I don't care, just go to school. But you can tell Styles really wants his father to believe like something's wrong. Mm-hmm. And something's amiss, and he wants his dad to help him out. But, you know, of course, his dad is, you know, doesn't really believe in the supernatural or like Styles does. But, right. You know, seeing is believing, you know, and Styles has seen a lot, especially in this episode, you know, birds, deer.
Yeah, you know, it's well, like, I mean, getting some recognition from his dad, you know,
yeah.
he rarely gets that. And then it was funny because I was watching a little bit in the sort of the marathon leading up to the premiere. And there's that one episode where he finally gets to go on the pitch to play, and like Stalinsky's like, he's like, that's my son.
I like that
field. And it's like, okay, yeah. and it was a cute little moment, you know. And there's sort of here and there they have those moments where, or they've been through something hectic or whatever, and there's like I think there was one scene in a previous season where I don't know, he just like hugged his dad or something like that. And
it's
just this sweet moment, and like I love it's such an easy show to get into, the show. But I love, as an audience member, just watching those little moments. And like one of the biggest moments for me watching the first season was where Scott's kind of struggling to, when he gets emotional, not to kind of turn. And he's in the class and I think he's getting yelled at by, you know, coach or somebody. And he's, you know, kind of breathing, he's going to turn and whatever and stuff. And then I keep wanting to say Crystal. Allison, like, reaches back her hand or whatever, excuse me, and then just kind of, like, takes his hand,
mm-hmm.
you know, and there's just that little moment of, like, sort of just connection, and it'll all be okay. And I'm like, oh, it kind of slays me. You know, like, seeing them, you're like, why am I getting sucked into this? You know? But it's great. There are these real moments, you know, you can totally relate. And I mean, he's a werewolf and she's going like, hey, it's okay. You're not going to, you know, I'm here, you know. But you can totally relate to that stuff, you know.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, the whole metaphor of being a wolf. And I also like just how it would cure, you know, any ailments you have, like as your character, which we'll talk about more later on, but it seems like you're blind, and then as a werewolf, you were able to see. I'm not sure if you guys are allowed to comment on that, but just like Erica had the seizures the last season, and Derek recruited her to kind of heal her ailments. Is that something that you guys are allowed to talk about?
There's definitely, I mean, there's definitely qualities that they have, that the werewolves have as werewolves, which they don't in their human, you know,
lives.
Yeah. I mean, that definitely plays in a little bit, I think, for sure. I thought initially you were going to say that I was blonde, and I was blonde when I was a kid, and then my hair just got progressively darker, but it has nothing to do with this show.
So, I have a bit of an accent. I'm from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. So, country.
I have an accent too.
Really?
You have a great accent. Which we'll talk more about later, but I'm sure the viewers and iTunes listeners are going to enjoy your voice much more than mine. Getting back to this show, we find out that Jackson awoke as a werewolf, and Derek kind of gave him the 101 of being a wolf, and then he took off to London, and she refers to it as an American werewolf in London, which, if people didn't get the reference at home, that's a 1981 comedy horror film written and directed by John Landis, so that was a nice throw in there. And apparently Allison was in France for 4 months, and Scott didn't think she would be coming back, which we see she obviously is. And they're about to go on a double date, which we can only assume is with the twins from a later scene.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, if the twins are going shirtless, I mean, might as well, you know. I mean, I join in, you know.
So then we get this scene with the deer that's been terrified, that crashes into the windshield. And I'm sure as editing, you could talk about that.
Oh, yeah, that deer, wow. I mean, that was, like, something that was just incredible because, like, we, you know, when they shot the scene, it was just, you know, green screen, you're looking out the car window, and then, you know, we have this, you know, temp, you know, text that says on top of it, and we're doing the rough cuts, like, you know, deer crashes through window, and I'm like, what are we going to – I mean, really, we're going to see this? And then – it's incredible. We went through a couple different versions to get it right, but it's amazing how the process of that, getting it correct with, like, you know, the deer running through the window and the glass all being, you know, CG, it just looked so cool in the end. But as far as the scene went, everything sort of, it's interesting how we came out of this levity of there being this back and forth, like, oh, you can't see me now, like very high school, you know, sort of like you got to dodge your crush or something like that because you're too embarrassed. And then we're back into Teen Wolf land, which is the horror. Mm-hmm. And it's all about the horror and the thrilling aspect of it and the unexpected, which the deer represents, is the unexpected and the supernatural force that's scaring this deer to death, you know, and you can tell that it really, you know, brings the audience like this, oh, what's going to happen next after, you know, after seeing a deer crash through a window.
Right, and of course Stiles is on it immediately and speculating. Yeah. And we can go ahead and talk about the other animal incidents that happened. I mean, what about when we're in the classroom and Stiles, you know, notices Lydia's bandage and we find out she wasn't bit by her handbag but by her dog Prada. And and then all of a sudden, you know, we get these birds just bashing through the windows.
Hitchcock style.
Style. And pecking away at the students.
Yeah.
And I heard, you know, how was the editing process on that scene?
That was incredible. That scene was, I think, 3 minutes longer than what it is now. And it was just so much, like, you know, chaos, and like there was a lot more footage of people running around and stuff. But I think essentially what you saw on screen was like, you know, the best of the best. And I think they just wanted it to be like this shocking moment that people could, you know, retain and just like sort of like, oh, you know, just like, and then it's over. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, it's the type of thing where, like, especially most of the shots were, all the birds were CG except for the one on the girl's head that was like rapping at her head or whatever. So like a lot of that was just, you know, making sure that we were able to sell the scene as being this unexpected, scary scene, but also not going too long on it. And I think in general, it was just sort of like a very Hitchcockian, mm-hmm. you know, inspired scene in general. I think we had at one point we had temp birds in there that were from the birds. Like we put that in the scene just to like fill in. Okay, like these are birds, you know, that are, you know, and then, you know, of course the score was really good in that scene too. Just sort of like.
And then it was obviously a rights issue with Tippi Hedren estate and stuff.
So. Yeah.
And I did hear that early on when you guys were doing like a temp thing for it, that Max and Charlie were in these feathered suits.
Yes.
But it didn't play.
They couldn't get in the role of being a bird, you know.
Right. It's just like, they just never took to the air. It's just,
yeah, just.
It was a lot of hopping and not enough flying, apparently, so, you know.
I mean, you have to have, like, really great actors. Like, because, I mean, you're filming in front of a green screen. You have to imagine and stuff like that. And even with, like, the birds and stuff, when you see them coming, the extras, not so much the principals, because, you know, they're all great actors, but, like, the extras and stuff have to be good.
Yeah. And attractive.
always.
Otherwise, I mean, it just looks bad, and it's going to look fake, and it's not.
Yeah, they had a wind machine going. They had a lot of things going on in that scene. They had the wind blowing around, so you could get the effect of birds flying and papers mm-hmm. flying everywhere. And then also they had this little contraption that would go around where they could see bird shadows on the ground. And like, yes, people had to like. Long mm-hmm. takes of people freaking out, and then they would, and it's so loud too. Like we had to foley all the crowd yelling and desks moving and stuff like that. That all had to be put back because the wind was so loud, the wind machine. Yeah. So a lot of it, yes, the acting, yeah, they were like intense for like minutes at a time, and then they'd have to stop and take a rest and then go back into it again. A lot of yelling on this show.
And in
a lot of screaming. There's a lot of screaming on this show.
It's necessary.
Yes.
In this scene, we meet the teacher, the English teacher, Mrs. Blake. And is it kind of startling that she just happens to have everyone's phone number and texts them all at once?
I was going
to
say that.
What kind of mass texting system is she using? And she seems to know an awful lot about her students here.
Like, who knows all their, you know, the students' phone numbers?
I mean, I'm sure you fill that out the first
day. That's a way to make an impression, though.
Yeah.
I think, like, okay, Miss... You know,
but
I'd
some
listen.
Yeah, I mean, some phones have a delay though. Everyone sort of, well, I guess they did kind of get it delayed. It was great the way it was done. I really love that. And of course, Scott does eventually get taken out of the scene so that he can go to the hospital and deal with the other storyline. But before that, I want to just talk about the other animals that we see. Sheriff Zielinski goes to see the veterinarian Dr. Deaton. And he was going to call him because he thought there was an issue, someone killing off animals. But he then realizes that the animals had committed suicide, all of them. And that just goes back to talk to the deer and the birds. All these animals are terrified because something is coming. Or is it already here? Because the alpha pack is in town. But it seems like the way these animals are becoming aggressive, biting Lydia and getting mean and killing themselves and running out into traffic. And maybe there is something more even coming because the Alpha Pack has arrived. They're in town. So more horrors to expect, I guess. And then we go into the hospital scene and we meet a lot more of the Alpha Pack because Isaac is there and the motorcycle girl. And they're trying to, you know, keep Isaac under wraps and he's going into surgery and telling Scott's mom that... Scott is his emergency werewolf contact.
Yes, werewolf contact. You always gotta have one.
Hopefully he filled that out. Do you have an emergency werewolf contact?
I'll have to check. I need them on speed dial.
So Scott gets
EWC,
there.
Yeah.
Scott arrives in time as, you know, Isaac was dismissed from the surgery because his heel had presumably his wound had healed. But did we get to meet another Alpha member, Cora, is it, that was actually injecting him?
No, Kali.
Oh, that's Kali, yeah.
That's Kali?
Kali mm-hmm. is, yeah, the dude.
The one that injected
female,
him.
Yeah, Alpha.
And then also showed up in the end in the locker room, because we didn't quite learn their names yet, so I'm speculating. But, okay, so then Scott sees Ennis, another Wolfpack member, Alpha, mm-hmm. with, and he's the one with, he's kind of bald, and the one that's taking Isaac into the elevator. And just as he sees this, he realizes that this is, you know, not an actual nurse. And the elevator fight scene happens.
I'm sorry, before we go there, how cool, though, is those latex gloves with the nails just poking
through? Can you tell us about that? Because we obviously don't know.
Yeah.
No, I mean, I'm not involved in that. You know, I wasn't involved in that scene. But it's just, I mean, obviously he's a werewolf. But I love the fact that it's just that little sort of giveaway that that there's that little sort of turn that, you know, perhaps the nails grew like sort of through the latex glove, you know, after you put them on. Or perhaps they're already there when he put them on. Who knows? Because it would be kind of a delicate thing to do, I guess, to put them on while the nails were already out, you know. Either way, it's too cool. Yeah.
What's it like wearing those nails, though? You have them on in the.
Yeah. I have them on here and there. They're fine. They're fine. They're not as cumbersome as you might think. I did a movie which I'm not going to mention, but I don't know, about 15, 12 years ago or something.
Oh, mention.
Where it was called The Sorcerer's Apprentice, but it's not the Nick Cage one. It's, I decided my character basically could morph back into a rat. I was a rat in my human form as a human, but I wanted to retain some rat-like thingies. So I persuaded the director to let me have claws when I was in my human form. So then I got some nasty ones, but like glued on. So I had them glued on for like 6 weeks. You know, they were permanent.
Oh, wow.
Which was, I realized what it's like for women who have longer nails just doing your daily stuff. And, you know, the time I had a car, I didn't have like electric windows. So I remember doing like, so trying to wind down, because you can't like, I want to hold it like this, but I couldn't like hold it. So I was doing this sort of delicate kind of wind down the window thing. And, you know, trying to do up, you know, your pants and stuff. It's just, it's not a good thing for it's not a good look for a guy. It's really not. But it's kind of cool though, because there is something deadly about it, you know?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Which we get to see in the end scene, which we're not sure what happens with that. But
just got to try not to poke yourself in the eye. That's one.
Do
of
you
the
wear
things.
Contacts? Because that would be quite difficult.
I don't know, but I mean no. But you know, you're sort of going up to sort of, and then you've got to allow for the extra sort of inch and a half, I guess.
When you were wearing those, did you have any accidents?
No. And if I did, I wouldn't tell you. I've had a stumble here or there, but that's more of a visual thing. Yeah.
Do you ever have one that like pops off like right in the middle of a scene?
Oh yeah, that happens fairly frequently. Yeah. Yeah.
There goes
a
cut on nail.
Then everyone's like, hey, and then everything has to stop and
back to one.
Yeah, exactly.
So the elevator fight scene with Ennis and Scott is really where the music really kicked in, and it was such invigorating, motivating music. I was like, I need to like get up and dance.
Yeah.
It was just like, I want to fight somebody right now. I'm going to throw someone in an elevator.
Yeah.
That's probably why it's not elevator music, though. They normally play like the classical music.
Possibly.
In an
elevator.
Yeah, no, that scene was cool. That's like sort of like, you know, one of the first fight scenes in the whole thing, and you're just like, okay, like Scott's gonna take on this alpha, and you know he's getting his butt kicked the entire time, and that's when Derek has to save him. Mm-hmm. You know, kind of bittersweet for Scott in a way, you know, because it's like, you know, Scott's sort of like Derek. I don't know. They see him, they have this older brother, little brother kind of relationship a little bit, you know. So like the you know, it's just kind of interesting to see that, you know, Derek saving Scott. You know,
that was a great way to reintroduce Derek's character, him just kind of coming in, and Ennis was like, don't you know who I'm dealing with? I am the alpha. And then he pops in and says, I am too. And, you know,
we chucks him across the room.
We get that witty humor back. And yes, he turns to Scott and was like, shouldn't you be in school? So he's the older brother, protective brother, which is why this season is so exciting, because Deucalion is trying to get Derek to kill Scott. And the fact that Derek doesn't have a family, it was taken away from him. Scott's kind of like his family at this point. And the fact that Deucalion's trying to get Scott out of the picture and use Derek to kill him, I'm not sure how that's going to work out. But lots of threats coming our way, I'm sure.
Lots of threats. Lots of manipulation.
Yes.
Manipulation.
Yes.
Yeah. I just want to go ahead and talk about that scene when Scott was on his way up to the hospital, where I don't know if people knew at that point if you were just a blind man at the hospital, mm-hmm. which would make plenty of sense, or the fact that you were going to be the villain of the season that was introduced. That was just a great way to do it, yeah. where he was sort of being this new improved Scott, so he was willing to help, you know, a right. blind man.
I think, look, I mean, I think there's a bit of a music cue that suggests that perhaps it's not completely mm-hmm. benevolent. You know, it's like, right. ka-dunk, yeah. whatever it was, you know, as I'm walking in. I was like, okay, that's a little bit cool. Yeah, it's nice. It's a nice little, like, okay, who, all right. But I love the fact, like, as we leave the elevators, and, like, it's, like, walking, like, so painfully quickly, and Scott's, like, urgent, you know, mission, and it's kind of like, oh, you know, he just kind of, like, hangs his head there. It's just, yeah, it's funny, yeah.
Have you played a villain before?
I play a villain more often than not, yeah.
More often than not, you're always the villain. Yeah. I mean, you do have the villainous voice, which I know gamers love to hear in all the different video games that you do that we'll talk about in a moment. But I just, villains are always my favorite, like I said earlier, and I'm so excited that they introduced you right away, because oftentimes, different television shows, you don't see the villain really revealed until episode 5.
Yeah.
And the villains, in my opinion, is what really keeps a story going and makes the audience really want to come back and watch each week is the good and evil fight. Uh-huh. So I'm really glad that we got to see you in episode 1 and you scared everyone.
Yeah. I'm glad.
Episode 1.
Yeah. No, I'm glad we came in right off the bat. In terms of me playing baddies, it's I think for some reason casting in LA thinks, you know, I just look a little edgy. I'm not your sort of all American looking dude, although this is only the second role in 9 years where I've got to use my own accent.
Wow.
You know, everything else I've done has been, you know, either American or Russian. I play Russians quite often, like I was a baddie in Takers, Matt mm-hmm. Dillon movie. Like Russian mobster with like tats and hair and a beard and stuff. So what's nice is you know, I'm hanging around for a little bit. You know, oftentimes he's like, sort of, ah, bad guy, you know, here I am. And then, you know, and they kill me. So
that's the worst part about it. In most films and shows that you don't get the villain until the end, that's like revealed who the villain is. You need to develop the villain as much as you do the hero.
Right.
We need that character development from the villain and to kind of see their side of things. And that just makes the entire story grow. Immensely, I think. What do you think?
Well, yeah, I think Deucalion's a great counterbalance to Scott, because he sort of challenges, you know, that side of, like, you know, Scott being the earnest good guy. You know, he's like on the, let's say if it's Star Wars, he's on the good side of the Force. Deucalion's, mm-hmm. you know, on the dark side of the Force. But you're right, you absolutely need to have that other side to counterbalance the hero and challenge the hero. And then makes for a more interesting season, more interesting scenes. But yes, in the later episodes, like, there's some great stuff with Deucalion and Scott. And, you know, it's just like one of those things where, like, you can tell, like, Deucalion's got something up his sleeve, and he, you know, Scott's part of his plan.
I think, yeah, you know? I think what Jeff does really well is it's just, he writes intelligent characters, you know, and I think, you know, he's really created a, you know, an intelligent villain here, whereas, you know, oftentimes they can be very, you know, fictitious villains can be quite one note, and it's very hard to sort of, you know, layer or give some light and shade to these things where, you know, you're just kind of running out of a room and you know, blowing people away with a, you know, with a gun sort of thing. So it's nice, and there's a lot of rich language and you know, in some of the scenes. So it's nice. It's nice. You really get to get a good sense of this character, and yeah, like you were saying, it really gives Scott some food for thought. Yeah.
I'm looking forward to it. I really can't wait. I mean, I really love, I hope we get your backstory as well, which I'm sure Jeff will provide. But, you know, the best thing about villains is, like, their scarred past. Mm-hmm. And when people have scars and they get them removed or fixed, I'm like, why? I'm like, that is who you are. That's what makes a person. So I'm sure that this villain, Deucalion, also has a very scarred past, and I can't wait to hear that. But moving on then, talking about scars, Isaac's, apparently his outside wound had healed, but Derek and Scott took him back to the old house to patch up his insides, which apparently didn't heal because an alpha bite apparently takes a lot longer. Mm-hmm. And so then they're sort of talking about, you know, what's going on, and Scott's looking to him for advice of, you know, what to do and what's going on with the wolf pack. And Derek doesn't want Scott involved at all. He's like, go home. Nothing's going on. He's like, I know you were just trying to help, but I don't want your help. Like, he's protecting Scott. So, Scott, of course, doesn't, and Derek says he owes him a favor, and Scott wants it right now, because no one can see that open wound that Scott's bearing on his arm at the moment. So then we pull out the blowtorch, which I saw your tweet about being a bit excessive.
I was on board with Stiles's, Meanwhile, like, Isaac's lying there, you know, it's like okay, I guess he can last, you know, like, we'll take care of it. So it's a pressing issue for you, Scott, we'll take care.
Like, Isaac's dying. And he's like, can I get my tattoo that I paid for that just went away? It was like $200.
Let's think about that. Yeah, because there is some, it seems like there should be some kind of refund then from that.
Yeah, right?
That
it didn't stay. Like, where's my money?
Yeah.
It's like getting a haircut and saving your receipt. I go back. I'm like, this didn't work. I'm just kidding. So we get the, can you talk about the circles?
Yeah, well,
Scott was making?
It's something that, you know, this season's all about symbols. And, well, of course, last season was too. In fact, the entire series is about symbols. So, like, it's just Jeff's way of being like, you need to pay attention to this. You know, what Scott sees in his dream, and he says he saw this in his dream, and that is going to play out in some way. Mm-hmm. And I think it's just something for the audience to remember. Like, okay, like, I need to pay attention to this. Like, this is going to play a big part later on in the season. And,
right, because we got that close-up shot, and often, you know, with editing.
Yeah.
Thanks to you, we got the close-up.
I was just moral support, but, you know. Right. But, no, it's funny how, like, the symbols, like the Alpha Pack symbol is just so aggressive, and it's scary. I mean, you look at it, and you're like, this means business. This is not a benign symbol, like, oh, yeah, I feel safe. Like, no, someone's going to come and get you, you know.
Which Scott uses those nails we talked about earlier to scratch down the door, because apparently it's obvious that something's going on, because Derek's not an interior decorator. I don't know. So he obviously...
And there's not a lick of paint on the inside of that place. So
no.
If he's going to do something to the front, you know.
Take it all away. So we get to see that the Alpha Pack symbol is there. And Scott now, of course, wants to be involved. And Derek needs whoever is willing to help. And I really liked the editing at this point, because we are sort of, Derek is like narrating what's going on with sort of the locker room scene. And Motorcycle Girl, who is a mystery to us at this point, had just gone to find Scott at the school, and she couldn't because they just kind of missed each other. he was going to the hospital, and she was leaving the hospital to go to the school, and she bruises Lydia and Allison after grabbing them. And then Lydia comments, well, she bruised me. That was really funny. Of course, Lydia humor. But Allison kind of looks at it as if she sees that it might mean something in that moment, which doesn't make sense to us, but talking about how symbols are important, it's obviously going to come back, which we saw later in the end of the scene, that we see that mark in that last scene, that whenever they were putting their arms together, trying to figure out what color Allison wanted to paint her room, their arms kind of go together, and we get this mark, and we go to the next scene, and it appears to be on this tank, sort of marking the location of where Boyd and Erica are. So I guess it was the Motorcycle Girl's way of sort of pointing them in the right direction.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very mysterious way of conveying information, but you know, for good reason probably, but yeah, it's interesting how, like, you just at the end of the episode, you're at this unknown location where, yeah, Boyd and Erica might be. And it just sort of ends like, okay, we know they're alive. Mm-hmm. And then it just, okay, well.
And they've been there for 4 months, apparently.
Yes.
And it'll turn out to be a pretty cool location, too.
Yes.
Yeah, it's a pretty awesome location.
Yeah.
We're excited.
Yeah.
Can you tell us, did you guys film that particular scene in Los Angeles?
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And so, like Derek was narrating the fight scene in the locker room with the motorcycle girl, and she's kind of, we see Ennis there, we see the twin alphas, Ethan and Aiden, and we see Collie. Mm-hmm. She's sort of fighting them all off, but it's too many, and then she's down against the lockers, and we get to see Deucalion again.
The reveal.
The reveal. And you kind of come over and, you know, talk to her and in this very creepy voice that scared me and I'm sure a lot of the other viewers.
That's my regular speaking voice.
Intimidating.
This is why I get called in for bad guys. Everyone thinks it's creepy, I think.
You get like a phone call at 2 a.m. like, hello. It's like,
ah. You probably don't get too many of those people calling you if they get the wrong number and they'll probably just hang up right away. Or what do those people call? They call all the time, try to sell you
telemarketers.
Stuff. I don't really get those anymore, but they would probably just hang up.
Yeah, I don't. I actually did phone the do not call thingy, but I have started getting spam texts now. Ugh. I got like a pitch text. I was like, what?
What is
it? Have they got my phone?
If only
now?
They could hear your voice, they wouldn't be doing that.
That's the thing. That is the thing.
So we do
Doesn't work with automated phone lines, though. That I've discovered.
Really?
I've been like, operator. Operator. Please choose from the following 7 options. You know, yeah.
So we get that little speech from Deucalion at the end to Motorcycle Girl about that, you know, you're going to use Derek to kill Scott and the plot of the whole season's revealed. And then we're not sure her fate because you gave her a nice little whack there. Which I'm sure you guys can't talk about whether she's alive or not, which we'll see next episode. But, yeah, it looks like at least if she is dead, she left a mark for Lydia and Allison to be able to find Boyd and Erica. So she did leave a message behind.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So, yeah, that was an amazing episode. We have so much to look forward to in, you know, the next 23 because we get 24 episodes this season.
Oh, yay.
Yeah. Yes, they wrapped on 3A and then 3B starts up at some point after I think.
So you guys filmed the first 12,
yeah,
I believe.
The first 12, yeah, and so and then they're just going to air them accordingly after that. But yeah, it's exciting. It's like it's a big deal to have like 24 episodes and like that just shows that, you know, like I mean, this is just the first episode. Can you imagine like how they're going to play out like the epicness that's going to play out?
Well, I was reading a lot of reviews and they were talking about wondering if it was going to stay to that level. Yeah. Can you guys comment on that at all?
I mean, I think there's way more stuff that gets revealed. I mean, this is just scratching the surface of what there is. Because I've been struggling to remember, because it's been, you know, we've been shooting for like 6 months and it feels like a feature, you know, it feels like working on a feature for this, you know, good length of time because you're filming kind of nonstop basically. And, you know, we don't get to see anything as the actors kind of thing. So it's really cool, like for us as well, sitting down and watching, you know, I saw a little glimpse of a scene or two up until this point, but you know, to sit down and watch, you know, the whole episode cut together and stuff, and I'm going like, oh, and I know, ooh, you know, and I'm so excited for some of these reveals. You know, down the line, it's going to be, yeah.
Yeah, this season is super. I mean, I worked on the second season, and this season is super, super ambitious. Like, just everything just got stepped up. I mean, they shot so much more footage than they did last season, and, like, they did, everything was just so, like, planned out. And they shot with, like, you know, sometimes they would shoot with 3 cameras, getting all the coverage, and they would just shoot around the clock. Getting these scenes done. A lot of slow motion shooting, too. A lot of, like, you know, shooting at 120 frames per second just so they can get the more dramatic moments and especially in the fight scenes, too. Like, it's really cool. Like, just stepping it up to where, like, you know, it's much more about the action this season. It's much more about the horror this season. Like, they sort of I think Jeff wanted to just take Teen Wolf back to the thriller aspect of you know, it's you know, yes, the relationships are very important. You know, Scott and Allison's relationship, you know, plays out, you know, in this season. But I think the most important is probably just like, you know, this mystery that, you know, we're all trying to solve, which is, you know, who's pulling the strings, you know, if you will, you know, like what's really going on. But
and I hear we get a lot more of the mythology as well.
Yeah. Yeah. That's the other cool part is, you know, we're always, you know, in season two, you know, we had questions like, why does this guy have red eyes and this guy have blue eyes and this guy have yellow eyes? And, you know, we're just like wondering, like, which, why do certain werewolves have different color eyes? And in this season, it gets explained, which is really cool. It's like, yeah, I, you know, it's, and it's actually a unique way of explaining it too, you know, the way they reveal it and stuff like that. So a lot of the fans' questions about certain things do get answered this season, which is cool.
Well, I'm very excited, and I'm sure everybody at home is too. Right now, we're going to go ahead and do an AfterBuzz exclusive interview with Gideon, who agreed to join us today, and thanks again for coming on. We really appreciate it.
Yeah, yeah.
So I was reading your bio. It's so interesting. I mean, you do the best of video games. You do the voiceovers for Guild of Wars, World of Warcraft, Assassin's Creed, Diablo, Final Fantasy, Halo, Mass Effect, Call of Duty. These are some of the best video games out there. How did you get into this voiceover acting?
I started doing voiceovers when I was in South Africa before I moved here. I was originally from the UK and then grew up in the UK and then moved to South Africa when I was a kid. And I got into voiceovers while I was still at drama school, but that was more like kind of commercial VO. And there wasn't really a gaming industry, so to speak. And it was, yeah, it was when I moved here and towards the end of 03. I kind of credit Final Fantasy 12 with being, you know, my sort of big break, if you will, which was like one of the first couple games I worked on, and I played a character called Balthier, which is, you know, it was kind of a big character, and you know, it's a huge franchise, and yeah, got a lot of sort of attention from that, and yeah, it was a good, that was a good springboard into gaming, you know. Yeah.
I read that you were an only child and you kept yourself amused. Amused by imitating voices from radio, TV, and making, and so like making, turning your life into acting was like the logical progression of it. But so I'm just always really thrilled by people's backgrounds, and that obviously transforms who we are as adults. So I'm sure that had a big part of your voice acting.
Yeah, I mean, it really was me keeping myself amused. If I give you like some of the early stuff that I did, it's, that's going to completely date myself, and you know, and no one's going to recognize these references, perhaps. But I mean, Casey Kasem, you know, would do this, you know, American Top 40 show, and I remember listening to that on the weekends or whenever it was broadcast in South Africa, and I just remember it's like, you know, it was. I remember specifically, and I think I might have done this before, and, but there was USA for Africa. This whole, this is now 85, before many people listening were born.
You'd and, be surprised.
but I remember distinctly the and then there was like Casey Kasem like, buy an extra copy and give it to a friend. You know? Like, and he would always do that. He was like, it's a long distance dedication from Janet. Janet sends this out to Paul, who she met back in whatever. And they met at a truck stop and they never saw each other again. So, Paul, wherever you are, this is for you. You know, it was, yeah. I was like, sort of, wow, that's pretty cool. So the long distance dedication, you know. But yes, yeah, so I'd be doing like that and, you know, silly voices and stuff. And it amused me. And I remember doing like Airwolf. Airwolf is ripe for a remake. I don't know why nobody's remade that. But that was just, you see, no one's going to remember this stuff. But anyways, they had it was all about this like souped up chopper. And Jan Michael Vincent and Ernest Borgnine was in that, and it was this chopper made a sound because it would come out of this kind of like, I guess it was like somewhere in the Grand Canyon or something, but there'd be this sort of hollowed out type cone, like the most enormous ant hill you've ever seen, and the thing would go, and then it would always do this sort of jet speed sort of flyby thing, you know, which was just an awesome sound. I won't do it now because I'll kill the mic, but yeah, so it's kind of messing around with that sort of stuff. And I mean, I remember distinctly reading the back of like shampoo bottles and stuff, mm-hmm. you know, when I was in the shower trying to sound like the commercials I heard on the radio.
That's an incredible talent.
So. Yeah.
I feel like everyone has a super sense. I can't really hear or see very well, but I can smell like from a mile away. And I feel like yours must
be. You can smell me from across the table. That's what you're saying.
I might be a werewolf. I'm not sure. But I do have some qualities. But
you got some red claws as well.
I do. Yeah. Anyway, I just feel like, you know, you probably have a very superhuman hearing strength and being able to imitate these voices.
I don't know. I mean, I think it's maybe it's kind of like a sort of a musicality or something, mm-hmm. you know. But it's definitely, yeah, it was definitely fun, and it kind of kept me amused. And I did, you know, I started off doing stand-up comedy. And I would do like sort of impersonations and that kind of stuff. And then I sort of actively stopped doing that because people only saw me as a funny guy. And then it's kind of weird that, you know, eventually once I moved here, you know, I couldn't get, yeah, I mean, I don't think people would give me like a line on like a sitcom, you know, unless I was like the bad guy, you know.
There could be a very funny bad guy.
But inside me, it's hard to believe, but inside me is a Hugh Grant, you know.
I believe it. Yeah. I can kind of see it. Yeah. You were telling us earlier that you recently worked on Survivor Type and it's making the festival circuit right now. Can you sort of tell us about your role in that?
Yeah. So this was last year we made this movie, and it's a short film. It's based on a Stephen King short story by the same name, Survivor Type, and it's just a great story. It's for want of a popular culture reference, it's like 127 Hours meets Castaway, mm-hmm. and you know, you've got this guy who's a lone survivor of a shipwreck disaster, and you know, he's a little cocky in the beginning, and then he realizes that help is not coming, you know, and he's a little bit stuffed. And he's on this rock, this basically pile of rocks. There's no vegetation there. There's nothing he can. There's no coconuts and stuff. There's like nothing to live off. So it's he goes to sort of desperate means, and he ends up, you know, having to do some pretty gruesome things to himself, and he kind of goes insane. But it's a great vehicle because it's for the most, it's like a, I think it's maybe like 31 minutes long or something, and sort of 29 minutes is just me,
wow.
Kind of sort of sitting on this rock, and it was just a great acting exercise because you don't often get that opportunity to kind of sink your teeth into a role, you know. I'm getting to sink my teeth literally into Teen Wolf now. So it's cool to kind of, to be able to just go through the whole gamut, you know, of emotions and stuff. So, so that's doing the festival circuit. We've won a couple awards and stuff. I know we've got a festival coming up the end of either June or July. Don't ask me which it is, though, but survivortypeshort.com, I think, is the website.
Great. Everybody should go and check that out. And, sounds awesome.
Otherwise, GideonEmery.com has links to everything.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for coming on the show today.
It was
amazing having you and getting all this inside information. And now we're going to go ahead and roll into predictions.
And now, your AfterBuzz TV predictions.
Me?
Sure, you go ahead and start us off anew.
I have too many predictions because it just looks like such a great season and I can't wait to see it. I predict that Allison and Scott, this is weird saying predictions when you have an editor here and like somebody who's like, you know,
on the show. They know a little bit more than we do.
Yeah. that Allison and Scott will get back together, possibly. And then I think that maybe Styles and Lydia may do like a little hookup, but it's not going to be like a full-on relationship.
At the moment, she's with Aiden.
Yes.
Which apparently Aiden's looking for a relationship as he asks for another date in this episode. And she's just like, meh. She just wants a boy toy right now.
I know. She's so cute. I love her. I think that Derek is going to kind of go to the evil side.
You do?
which is good for me. I mean, as long as he does it shirtless, you know, I can't really complain about that.
Will we be seeing Deucalion shirtless?
We'll have to wait and see. There was
Do we want to see him shirtless? Yes, we do. We're kind of close
to it. I have no qualms about it. We get very close to it. I'll say that much, because I'm not going to promise something that I know we haven't delivered. But
we can always come on the finale after show, and if it hasn't happened yet on the show.
No, there's we come very close. We come very close. How about that? in an exciting and new and different way. I'll say that. So that's good.
I'm excited about that. Yeah. I'm not sure.
You've got a bit of a wait, though. Yeah.
It looks like Derek might be getting a girlfriend this season as he, I don't know, transitions to the evil side. If he does temporarily or not, it looks like he might be dating one of the alpha girl members. And yeah, I think Allison will come to terms with what's going on and the loss of her mother and her with these new roles as the leader of her family. So yeah, I think they will get back together. I think maybe Scott's mom and Mr. Stilinski will have a romance in the future. Who knows? They seem pretty close.
That'd be cute. I like that.
Yeah. And, you know, as for the Alpha Pack, it's going to be a heck of a season and a huge fight. This is just going to be one huge war.
It's building up to something epic, I can tell you that much. It's just like, it delivers. Completely delivers, you know, on all levels. It's just a great season. I'm happy to work on it. It's really cool. Really cool to see the whole thing.
Thank you, Corey, again for joining us. I think Corey's going to try to join us weekly. And Gideon, please come back whenever you know, your schedule provides for it. Hey, guys, thanks for joining us. You can find me at Cinematic Escape on Twitter. Corey, where can we find you?
You can find me on Twitter. My handle is Corey Trench, spelled CoreyTrench.
And you can find me, Anique Dufour, on Twitter and Instagram at JustAnique, and my website, AniqueDufour.com.
And you can find me at my name as well, Gideon Emery, GideonEmery.com, or at Twitter as well. I do tweet a lot. I was live tweeting. I've never done a live tweet before. It was an experience.
I was retweeting.
My thumbs are still recovering.
Thanks, guys. Have a great week, and we'll see you next week.
From Bing.com, executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Buzz you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.